And the association is, I like to say it's sort of the authority equivalent of the league or the school boards association, in that we focus on the New Jersey units of local government that are called authorities. And the ones that particularly are members of my association are water, wastewater, and solid waste entities. So we have some very, very large systems, like Passaic Valley Sewage Commission is a member of our association, and then we have very, very small members, and Raritan Township MUA is a member of our association. So we become involved in doing continuing education and lobbying, and we're just sort of monitoring regulatory issues, and that's kind of the function I'm in now. Just quickly about me, I'm a Hunterdon County resident.
Yes, you are.
I've lived here for 32 years, and I was on a school board. I was on the Milford School Board for 5 years. I was the president, and I also worked for the Hunterdon County Democrat. So, in fact, a lot of my interest in local issues came out of my work at the Democrat, really. So to get to the legislation, there's a bill called S-3870, and the bill would make some fundamental changes in the way a community decides to sell its sewer system. Now, this is about the sewer side. There is already a law very similar to this on the books on the drinking water side, and we can talk about that too later if you'd like. The bill that I'm talking about would eliminate the public referendum that's currently required. If you want to sell your system in New Jersey, you have to ask the members of your community for permission by way of a public referendum. This bill would eliminate that. So it would take the voters out of the equation entirely.
And is that just for utilities? Or just for authorities, or authorities and utilities? So,
no,
like, the town of Clinton has its own water and sewer utility,
right?
But we're not an authority.
No, it would be for municipalities. It would,
so, any municipality, regardless, right, of whether you have an authority or a utility.
Right. Well, there's I think a few more steps. In fact, I think it's really, this is should be more of a concern on the municipal side.
Right.
So just to clarify the way things are in New Jersey with that. There are many municipalities, such as town of Clinton, that have their own water and or wastewater system, and that's either a department or it's called a utility. But then there are also authorities, which are separate organizations created by a county, a municipality, or a group of municipalities. And the authority is given specific responsibility for the water, sewer, and or solid waste. And,
right,
and they all have them in various amounts. So you have many municipalities that are doing the collection, and they are sending the wastewater to be treated at a regional sewage plant, like Ocean County is an example of that. But the bill is really should be of concern to municipalities, because in an authority, you can you have a little bit of an arm's length situation. So in order for the municipality to sell the system, they would have to first dissolve the authority, which they can do.
Right.
The authority is an instrumentality of the local government that created it.
Right.
So
right,
they have the ultimate decision. So it's actually a little bit more complicated for authorities, and to that extent, this bill isn't as direct an impact on them, but it is directly impacting municipalities.
Right.
So should you want me to tell you a little bit more about the bill? Or?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So the bill would eliminate the public referendum. It also changes the way systems are valued. So when you have a transaction, any kind of buying and selling transaction, you have to have sort of a mutual agreement about what this item or system, whatever it is you're selling, is worth. If that's how basically you come to a selling price. It kind of gives,
right,
you the ballpark. The wastewater systems have traditionally been evaluated and for the system of a sale on the basis of depreciation and replacement costs and these types of concepts. This bill would allow a different system of valuing the the wastewater system to be used. And the system they use is called fair market value. The problem with that approach is that it tends to inflate the price of the system. And it makes it very tempting for a local elected mm-hmm. leader to want to see a higher price for a system. They may want to use that money for municipal purposes.
Right.
But it also, and then, of course, from the buyer's point of view, from the point of view of the investor-owned utility that's purchasing the system, they can bid up what they're offering because they don't have such a financial liability. They are going to be able to recover the entire cost of the transaction in their rates.
Right.
So in other words, it may not, its entire cost or very close to the entire cost. So it means that I sell you my system, but then I have to pay you back for what you gave me, completely, all of it. And that's really where the problem comes in.
Right.
It's really not fair. It's kind of taking advantage of a situation where you have a lot of municipalities who are very concerned about how they're going to continue to manage their systems, and you have a situation where you have a bill that it's kind of price gouging in a way.
Right, and gives them access to sell something off without having to do any of the work. I mean, that's one of the issues you and I have talked about this is,
yes.
you know, state mandates about creating these asset management plans,
mm-hmm.
which the town of Clinton obviously was ahead of the game because we own our own water utility and sewer utility. We have been proactive in putting together these asset management plans. It helps us plan out mm-hmm. as far as how we're going to do infrastructure improvements. But there are a lot of municipalities that have not done any infrastructure, mm-hmm. have just kind of fixed the problems as they've come along. And this would give them that cash infusion,
yes,
without having to deal with the actual upkeep. Now, obviously, that the ratepayers will then bear the brunt of the upkeep because anything that's been let go for as many years as some of them have,
right.
that's going to be expensive.
That's right.
So, yes.
Well, now is. Based on what you're saying, it doesn't sound like you're arguing that it should never be, one should never sell their utility or their authority. You're saying that this bill should not allow for the cutting out of input from residents and ratepayers.
Well, okay, so I work for entities that are local governments.
Right.
And they do a very good job of delivering the service that they're required to do. And so I personally, and I think AEA in general, thinks that by and large, it's better for the public to own and or operate its own system, mm-hmm. and be that whether through the municipality or through the authority. Now, I also would say that I can't come in and tell a municipality what to do. I mean, individual municipalities have to figure out what is best for them.
Right.
One of the things that we see is that they don't necessarily get all the information that they need to make the decision, and that's one of the concerns about the bill, is that because it allows the process to be less transparent and essentially speeds it up.
Fast tracked.
Then, right. yes, exactly. Then that important dialogue that needs to happen in a community isn't happening.
Right.
And so from that point of view, you know, I would really be concerned. But ultimately, it is the municipality's decision, but it really should be including the voters.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we talk about that a lot here in all aspects of municipal government, that really that's our goal, certainly.
Absolutely.
In Clinton, is to include our voters and our residents and our
Well, it makes it
in conversation.
Easier to have, you know, to understand where everyone's thought. I don't want to be blindsided because we've made a decision and everyone is all like up in arms. Well, why would you decide to do that? You know, it by including them and putting it out there, you know, I may disagree. You may disagree.
Right.
But ultimately, it is the voters who are going to bear the brunt of whatever.
Yes.
Right.
You know, and I got to be careful that I don't want to, you know, I'm not bashing large business or the private utilities.
Right.
But it's not the same kind of service. You know, when you have an issue with your water in town of Clinton, I'm getting that phone call.
Right, right.
Regardless of the time of the day or night. Our guys are out doing water main breaks in the middle of the night on holidays in the coldest day of the year. I don't know that that always happens when you're with dealing with some of the larger utilities.
Well, and again, I mean, I have, we work very closely with the investor-owned utilities on various matters, and I think that it's not so much the form of the organization as the people who are running it.
Sure.
But
right.
Having said that, I think that one of the values of local
control
system management
right.
is that it is local control. It's not people in a boardroom many miles away or a call center that's
right.
being set up and that type of thing. So that is one of the items I would cite as a value.
Right. It's also not about shareholders. So the bottom line is not about making money for shareholders of, in a company. And that,
right.
I'm not disparaging that in any
right.
way, shape, or form. But, you know, in New Jersey, our taxes are so high for the services that we get. We try to do as much as we possibly can with a little amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had forwarded even to you, we had done a rate comparison,
yes.
and the town of Clinton rates are lower than some of the other larger utilities because we're able to keep everything in-house. We share services. You know, we look at this from a bigger picture and focus on making sure that we're improving infrastructure because obviously that keeps costs down when you're at least maintaining it. You know, versus having to respond to water main breaks in the middle of the night, which no one wants to go out and do.
No.
Yeah, it's a question of, to me, it's a question of sort of stacking the deck. The investor-owned utilities, as a sort of business plan, a strategy, they
mm-hmm.
want to acquire systems. And not just in New Jersey, but in a number of states, the investor and utilities have been working to make privatization easier. As they like to put it, make states more regulatory friendly for
right.
them. Friendly for them doesn't necessarily mean good or the best thing for the ratepayers. A system that's run correctly, especially if it has been putting off upgrades for a while, may need to raise rates. So this isn't about your rates will never rise if you have a
right.
public system.
Right.
That would be nice, but that's unfortunately not the case.
Right.
Any system needs to be upgraded and maintained, and the people who work in the system need to be paid, and all of these things. The additional cost in the terms of the investor and utility is, of course, the return on investment, the profit that they make.
Right.
The government entities that do this have to, they're self-liquidating. They have to, they charge what is required to do the job and nothing else.
Right.
So that's where the difference comes in. It's paying unnecessarily more for the service than you would under if the system were public. So
right.
That's,
all right, we have to go to a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back to continue the conversation.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we are back. And to continue the conversation on this legislation that, again, you know, we try to focus on giving residents the information they need to, you know, make informed choices, and then also to make sure that they hold their elected officials accountable to anything that is going on. And, you know, this is an issue, as you and I talked about, this is an issue that is important because it's not the short-term gain of the dollars you get selling the utility or authority, but it's the long-term impact to, you know, to the residents and to the community, because eventually that money runs out.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I think, just to, for anyone who's listening, just to compare it to the idea of having a flat tax for a few years and how that feels really great for the few years that you have it. And then 5 years into your flat tax, when you realize, oh no, we suddenly have to raise our taxes 5 points. Yeah. And that's a very painful 5 points to take on, I think. That's sort of what we're talking about here. I think is that an apt comparison?
I think it is. I never thought of it that way, but it is similar in this sense. In a lot of these deals, the part of the agreement is we're going to keep rates flat for X number of years, 3 years or five
right.
years, whatever the case may be. And sometimes there's even a requirement that they are they're going to keep it no more than X percent after that. But it does matter to look at the fine print. And again, we go back to this whole idea of if this is an important decision, then the community needs time to discuss it.
Right.
So in one situation I know of, the agreement did require a flat rate for a certain number of time. But there was another feature of the agreement that wasn't so clear or wasn't so
right.
So well discussed at the time that said, well, that's assuming the revenue projections are what we think they are. So since the revenue projections weren't what the estimates were at the time of the transaction, the special assessment did go up. Yeah, the rates did go up. So,
right.
So it, you know, that's where the reading the fine print really
right.
really matters.
Now, can you just for anyone who's listening, can you talk through in a typical sale? Say, you know, a community wanted to sell their utility and or their authority or whatever mm-hmm. they had mm-hmm. under the current legislation, what it is now, not what they're trying to change it to, the residents have access to what kind of information? Do they get to see a prospectus? Do they get to see the fine print? Do they get to know kind of what they're facing?
Well, you know, I mean, anyone can Oprah anything.
Sure.
Right. Yes, we do know that.
Yes, yes. So, yes. So it's the. I don't think it's the necessarily the access to the document, the bid or the proposed contract. It's the complexity of the document and the fact that people don't necessarily have the time or the expertise themselves to really understand it. And when the whole process is accelerated, it becomes that much harder for them. So typically, the system would, they could advertise for bids, as many of them do.
Right.
Very often they are approached sort of informally, hey, if you ever want to sell our system, your system, let me know.
Right.
Right.
So they kind of have that kind of already in the mind. And then they will, according to the bidding laws, they will review the bids, reject the ones that they have to reject, and so forth. And then they come to some particular agreement about it. In this case, under the current law governing the sewer system sale, they would then have to go to a referendum, and then...
And it's a binding referendum.
Yes, I mean, as far as I know. I mean, once that's one of the problems. Once you sell the system, it's, I don't know if you would say impossible, but it's pretty darn close to impossible to buy it back.
Right. You're gonna have absolutely. Yeah, no, they're not going to, right.
Yeah, so it really is. And the other thing that people need to be aware of is, again, this is kind of gets into the weeds a little bit, but because of the way the investor and utility that's purchasing a system is allowed to distribute the cost that they're incurring of purchasing a system,
right.
They're allowed to distribute it across all of the state's ratepayers. So what that does is, for the local community, it's not as much of a rate impact. They're not going to get the hit for that entire $25 million
right.
or $75 million. It's going to be spread out. But in essence, the ratepayers across the state, any customers of New Jersey American Water or Aqua, whatever the case may be, all of the customers are really paying for
right.
that acquisition.
Right.
So because of the way that they can distribute the cost. So it's a little bit more hidden. It's not as noticeable that this additional cost is coming into the picture.
Right. So a town in South Jersey could be paying for a purchase in North Jersey that they get no benefit from.
Essentially.
Well, is there, I mean, let's talk about the other side of this. Is there any benefit to having a non-locally controlled water or sewer authority?
Well, it's
no longer an authority, but...
You mean owned by like a New Jersey American
yeah.
or an Aqua?
I'm not the best person to ask that question.
Well, she might be a little biased.
No, but I mean,
that's fair.
You know, obviously, people will often talk about the fact that they're going to be able to get this outside assistance and the benefit of a big corporation and that type of thing, the expertise. I would argue that there's lots of expertise on the public side of things, and that people should decouple the idea that, okay, we have a system, we're a little bit unsure of what to do next, and therefore the only option is that we sell it. Though I would like to
right.
decouple those two ideas, that you can you have to address issues with your system if you haven't been,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you have somebody retiring in the water and wastewater sector in general, on the public side and the private side. You have a lot of people who have worked in the business for many years who are starting to retire or have been retiring.
Yes.
So workforce is an issue in the
yeah.
utility industry. I think it goes even beyond water. I think it goes to electric and gas as well, but
right.
I'm,
yes.
I know less about that. So the town may have somebody who's been running the system for a long time, and this person is retiring, and so they feel at a crossroads about what to do. What they need to understand is that they have various options, and selling to an investor-owned utility is one of those options, but it is far from the only one,
mm-hmm.
and that there are good reasons to kind of take that into account when they go ahead.
Right. No, I don't disagree. I mean, we're experienced in that. We had our water superintendent and our sewer superintendent both retired this year.
Right.
So, but we knew it was coming. So for us, it was a planning process and making sure we had succession planning in place. We also do a lot of shared services.
Mm-hmm.
So all of our staff can really do multiple jobs. The other issue, which a lot of towns face, and that's the financing for infrastructure improvements.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw DEP under the bus right now, and I take this on myself. But, you know, the iBank has been a significant benefit to municipalities like Clinton, who have projects that are done that need to be done. I mean, we're talking $2 million projects, not a lot of money in the grand
right.
scheme of things. And I get that there are major issues with lead and water and failing infrastructure in some of our cities. I'm not disputing that in any way, shape, or form. What I have a problem with, and I think what other towns are going to experience the same thing, is why do I get penalized because I'm only looking to borrow $2 million? And why are you focusing all of that, what money is left, on the larger systems? There's got to, our applications are not weighed fairly any longer. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a huge financial burden because now the taxpayers and ratepayers are paying at a bond rate versus an iBank rate.
Yeah, I agree with you. The iBank has been doing such a wonderful job the last few years of making itself more user-friendly and in fact, encouraging people to understand that it's a really wonderful resource for them. Unfortunately, on the drinking water side, they actually became oversubscribed. They ran out of money.
Right.
When AEA filed comments on the amended intended use plan for the drinking water money, we made that very point that that you just made, that there should be a pool of money set aside for smaller systems.
Right.
$20 million, $50 million, right. Some right. amount that is exclusively for systems under X size because, as you say, in the ranking process, they may not get a fair shake as far as getting the money. And the other issue is that savings is, it's important for everyone,
right.
but it's so important for the small systems because it does make a difference in
It allows us to keep our rates
they can pay.
Manageable for residents.
Yeah, yeah. No, it really is. We also pointed out that the iBank started allowing about 10 years ago, they started allowing the investor in utilities to have the money. So, again, they have other ways of borrowing money. The public entities now, there's a smaller pie for them in a sense. For borrowing, so that's another issue that we raised. We said maybe it's time to go back to the old process.
Right. I mean, and that iBank money was, or NJEIT as it used to be called, was really meant for the municipalities, allowing the larger profit businesses to be able to borrow. And this is with part of the loan is interest free.
Right.
Right. Well, that's where we wind up in corporate welfare issues. And the state has no business in corporate welfare. And I'm just going to call a state on that.
I did DEP. You can call a state. We're all good. We do have to go to a quick news break. And then when we come back, we're going to continue this enlivening conversation.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Two powerful earthquakes in just a couple of days in California have a lot of people concerned that a bigger quake may be right around the corner. Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Janice Hahn.
But in the event of a major earthquake, what I'm worried about is that our residents in Los Angeles County are not prepared themselves.
Governor Gavin Newsom is estimating over $100 million in damage from last week's quakes. He traveled yesterday to Ridgecrest, where the quakes were centered, to survey the damage there. Starbucks issuing an apology after a worker at a store in Arizona asks a group of police officers to leave the premises. The executive VP of Starbucks writing a letter to the Tempe Police Department apologizing for that July 4th incident. And this is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you.
will even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
All right, we are back to continue the conversation. And again, this is about making sure residents are aware issues that impact them, legislation that could impact them. So, you know, we haven't talked about it yet, and I know, Riley, you asked the question. Who are the sponsors on both the Senate and the Assembly side? Do you know who that is?
Yes. Senator Paul Sarlo is the sponsor of S-3870. And on the Assembly side, it's Assemblyman Berzicelli.
Okay.
That one is A-5391, I believe. And, on the Senate side, the bill was released from committee by a vote of 3-2. So it wasn't a clean.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of room for discussion and thought among the legislators about this. And so that's kind of where the bill stands now.
So what are, I guess there's two parts to this question. What can residents do is one. The other is where, you know, how do we as elected officials help to ensure that, you know, towns like Clinton, I mean, obviously, I think we would still do a referendum. I don't, you know.
As long as it's us.
Right. Yes. You know, I can't speak for anyone else, but, you know, to give residents their voice, and then, you know, how do elected officials help, and what are your next steps? Where are you at with this?
Well.
Or the association, I should say.
Well, we're just going to try to talk to people and make sure that they understand what this means. The bill that is very similar was already signed into law in the previous administration on the drinking water side.
Right.
But actually, this one is kind of less pro-public involvement in that the drinking water bill, which was called the Water Infrastructure Protection Act, that bill actually created conditions that have to be met, and if they meet these conditions, then they can bypass the referendum. The conditions are very broad, so it's pretty easy to bypass the referendum. And there's a provision for protesting that approach and saying, no, we want to do a referendum, but the bar is pretty high. You have to get a petition, and it has to be 15% of the total voters from the previous General Assembly election. It's complicated.
That's not a lot of people.
No, that's – well, no, no. Well, it depends on who.
Depends on the town,
And maybe this is more the high bar part of it. It's 45 days. You only have 45 days. So
right.
People may not see or be aware of this until, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks into that.
When they get a notice from the new company.
Right.
So we're just going to talk to people and just let them know that this is happening and suggest that they talk to their elected leaders and to the legislators about it and say, hey, this is, you know, is this really the way we should be going in New Jersey as far as eliminating the public referendum and just tipping the scale so much in favor of one set of service providers rather than another. That's kind of what our message would be. People also, and I think, you know, you've probably said this during this program in the past, that calling up your elected officials, the mayor, the council people, the state senators and assembly people is very important, and it really does make a difference. They
Absolutely.
Are concerned about what people are saying. And so if people have concerns, they should call.
Yeah.
Good. That works. You talked a little bit about the water side and the fact that that has been. Do you know how many municipally owned utilities or authorities there are in the state of New Jersey?
How many
municipally owned utilities?
Well, if you talk about the number of authorities there are, I would say, about 100, 125 water and wastewater. I'm not talking about parking authorities or beach
right.
or any.
Yeah, no,
any
just strictly the water and
special districts,
water and
just
sewer.
Water, wastewater. And then on the municipal side, I don't know of the 500 and what we have,
565.
I don't know of those
how many
have a municipal department or not. It as I say, it varies so much based on whether they are part of, you know, they have their own department or they're part of an authority. Or,
right.
But it's a pretty big number.
Yeah, yeah. It seems significant.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, no, I would believe so. I mean, out here, definitely.
Yeah.
We can talk to Hunterdon, but...
Yeah, and the thing about the public referendum, too, is that it's not as if when referendums have been held that the purchase is always voted down.
Right.
That's not the case. Mm-hmm. Haddonfield had a referendum, and the public voted by a very healthy majority to sell the system.
Right.
But they also had... as far as I can tell, a fairly robust dialogue about it.
Right.
In Highbridge, they voted against doing the
sale. Water.
Right.
So it's not as if it's one way or the other.
Right.
Yeah. It seems to me that this legislation adds no value. So there's laws on the books currently, correct, about the way in which mm-hmm. one can sell their utility or authority. And mm-hmm. those laws function perfectly adequately. There's no reason to change them.
I would say
this legislation is not adding value. It's simply taking away rights,
additional voices
from
right.
residents.
And and it's part of an effort. There's been, as I said earlier, there's a strategy within the investor-owned utilities to make to create conditions more conducive to what they want
sure.
to accomplish.
Right.
And they, you know, they've been working on that. This bill is one in a series of changes that have occurred in recent years that have really made it much easier for a system to be privatized and that have, I would argue, been less good for the ratepayer.
Right.
The rate council, the state's appointed representative to represent the interests of ratepayers, rate council has opposed this bill. When the Water Infrastructure Protection Act was passed, the rate council opposed that bill. Her name is Stephanie Brand, and she said, this bill will inflate prices.
Right.
This will cause the inflation of the sales prices of these systems. So, you know, it's people who are specifically assigned the responsibility of protecting ratepayers who have pointed this out.
Right. So so we're talking about a bill that adds no value that additionally regulates what our residents can and can't do.
Right. Participate in.
And what they can and can't have a say in with respect to their own...
Their own advocate. Well, the ratepayer... The fact that the ratepayer advocate is... Yes. You know, this is probably... I'm going to try and be really careful so that I don't get myself in a ton of trouble. But these are the issues that when they come up, no one... I don't want to say no one. People are not thinking about the impact to a community.
Right.
You know, this is my one concern when the legislature and the governor look at legislation that on the surface may look perfect.
Sure.
But no one drills down to say, what does it mean locally? It's like the unfunded mandates. Oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it. So now a town takes on a new responsibility with no funding to support it.
Right. Well, we talk about this a lot, you and I, and then also here on the show and in council, and that's that regulations are great, except that New Jersey is such a vastly diverse state with diverse needs and diverse towns and of all sizes, shapes, and types, that when you pass a regulation that doesn't allow for that diversity,
right,
you wind up with this one size fits all that fits no one. And so we wind up in these sorts of scenarios. And I doubt the legislature is listening to our radio show, but should they want to listen to our radio show,
right,
I hope that they stop and think about the fact that, you know, municipalities have to govern their towns. And so when you are creating legislation, it's a necessary requirement that you consider how municipal government works, because municipal government has to actually take that legislation and use it functionally. And so that's where I get frustrated, and that's right. where we wind up kind of running into a wall.
And I try to be very mindful of the fact that local officials have, you know, some serious concerns, and that this is in some ways a very attractive situation to them. But as you said, Janice, it's a short-term solution.
Right.
Ultimately, it doesn't benefit the ratepayers. The effect is particularly bad in a place that has a high number of low or moderate income folks.
Right.
I mean, that may appear to be a way of protecting these residents, but in the long run, it isn't, because it's going to mean additional
right.
burdens. And the comparisons, you did the rate comparison with the surrounding area. The rate comparisons make it very clear
right.
What the rates that people on the public side pay and people on the investor and utility side pay. And some part of that is to help them purchase other systems.
Right.
Right, of course. I mean, that's capitalism, and I take no issue with a corporation doing what a corporation does. I take
right.
issue with legislation that's unnecessary and burdensome and takes away the voices of residents simply to streamline things for corporations. So while I think being business friendly is, you know, as a person who is focused on economic development and the sustainability of certainly of our town and
right.
the county and New Jersey as a whole, I think that that is an essential component of making New Jersey thrive and be vibrant. However, that doesn't necessarily mean we need to clear a path of all dissent so that corporations can come in and do whatever
exactly.
they feel like at any given time. So there has to be a balance, and this legislation appears on its face, and I would have to dig into the nuts and bolts of the legislation.
Right.
But from this conversation and my own reading, appears on its face to be unnecessary, and that makes me wonder where it's coming from.
And
the why of its
right.
of its establishment in the first place.
Right. So who is advocating?
Who's benefiting from this?
Exactly. And I think that the you make a very good point. People are free to do what they need to do in their own world. So the corporations are entitled to follow their business plan and to have a strategy and all of those things. It's the evenness of the playing field. And the other point is that everyone in the water and wastewater sector, regardless of what organization they're affiliated with, believes this, which is that it is essential for people to keep up their systems for the economic
Absolutely.
Vitality of
right.
the community.
Yes.
So the town of Clinton is to be commended for its efforts in keeping up its own system and recognizing that that needs to be a priority,
right.
Because that's everyone, no matter which organization you're with in the water and wastewater sector, that's something that everyone agrees on.
Yep.
And this is not about not properly maintaining systems.
Right.
That is not what it's about at
yeah,
all.
No, yeah, no, absolutely. We can
right. Water and sewer
that.
Should not be politicized
no.
in any way, shape, or form.
No.
It's health and public safety for, you know, all of the residents of the state of New Jersey.
Yep.
And that is key. And again, I understand, I've seen it over and over, elected officials struggle with managing, you know, we all have our 2% cap, you know, costs continue to go up. And when you see that shiny, oh, look at that, you know, $35 million, that's going to last forever. $35 million doesn't last forever. I don't care what anyone
no.
says. Because not only that, you know, so take the town of Clinton as an example. We share our staffing. All of our staff are cross-trained. if I sell off, or if we sell off water and sewer, that cost of employees is now borne solely on the current fund. Now, granted, you don't need as many employees because you're not doing water or sewer work. You're only doing road work. But that cross-training and that ability to alleviate the cost on some of the water, because, again, our guys can who are on the roads can also do water. They have some of them have their licensing. Same thing with sewer. You know, comes time to plow for snow, all of that is all, you know, we all come together. We understand the sharing of the services and the sharing of the and how much we save our ratepayers and our taxpayers that way. But, you know, for a town that is struggling financially, you know, may not have some of the economic opportunities, and to see that money and say, all right, well, I'm going to be sitting here, you know, however many years I sit here as mayor or council, you know, that's going to look really good. But eventually that pot of gold ends.
That's right.
Right. I mean, it's very tempting. And in some instances, it may well be the right choice.
Right.
I don't think that it is my place to say whether it is or it isn't.
Nope, not at all.
But I also, as an elected official, don't think it is solely my place to say whether it is the right choice. I think with a decision that large, it is necessary to have the input of the public.
Yes.
And the people who will be impacted for not just a week or 10 days, for decades.
Yes.
For the entirety of their property ownership in the town, if they're going to be there for generations, for their kids. You know, that's the kind of decision that has consequence for lifetimes.
Yes.
In my opinion. And so to not get input from the people who will be affected for forever.
Right.
It just seems ludicrous to me. I don't know why you would do that. It doesn't make any sense other than to make it easier for yourself to make the decision. And which is not to say that I don't think, you know, part of being elected is the public trusts you to make decisions.
Right.
But it also trusts you to know when you should ask their opinion.
Yes.
So, you know, I think, again, I go back to the balancing aspect of these sorts of things. And we have lots of big decisions to
right.
make.
And if we put it out there, we give people the opportunity to participate. You know, if someone chooses not to participate,
that's a different story.
That is absolutely. But, you know, we make sure that there's nothing, we try not to do, obviously, anything in close. Legally, there are things that you have to do in close,
sure,
and you
course.
Have to address that way. And, you know, as soon as we can share, we do. But in the meantime, you know, we encourage people to, you know, come to the meetings, whether our meetings or another town's meetings. I mean, Milford, you're dealing with the whole paper factory.
Yep,
you know, and I'm kind of watching that play out and how people have been engaged in that.
Yes.
I mean, the things that impact people's lives, you should absolutely, if I wasn't an elected official, I would absolutely make sure that my voice is heard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To be a part of whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Pro or con, you know, whichever way you sit on it, you know, I can't complain. You know, I'm going to quote Allie McGarren here. You know, you can continue to complain and be part of the problem, or you can step up to the plate and be part of the solution.
That's right.
You can have a voice and share your piece. Obviously, we hope that everyone does everything in a way that is, you know, respectful.
Right.
We can have differing opinions, but we're going to respect the fact that everyone has the right to have an opinion.
Absolutely.
And that's what we ask the legislature, is to respect the right that residents have a right to an opinion as well.
Right.
That's right.
Also, it just seems like there's other things.
Yeah, I got to watch the time. We missed the commercials.
We missed the commercials.
So we'll just keep going until the end, and we'll do all the commercials at the end.
There we go.
It's the one benefit of not having to stick to this script completely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just, is this something specific to New Jersey? Is this something that this kind of legislation, is this, do you know, is this a national thing? I mean, infrastructure is a national issue.
Yes,
and so
yes.
I'm curious to hear what's going on.
It is not just in New Jersey. The strategy of reducing the regulatory roadblocks to purchase of systems has been an effort in many states. Pennsylvania passed a law a few years ago, I believe it was called Act 12, that does something similar to what what this piece of legislation in New Jersey does. And while it's still relatively new in New Jersey, in Pennsylvania, we do know that there was a system that was being sold, and there was an investor-owned utility that bid, and there was actually a public system that bid. And the investor-owned utility was able to outbid the municipal purchaser, I believe it was an authority,
right,
by something like 43%.
Wow.
They offered. Now, that's the kind of thing you're talking about.
And that cost is getting passed on.
Fair market value allows the system prices to be inflated. I'm sure to the town that $75 million price tag was very, very attractive. But I would wonder how well people understood that that money was going to be recouped through the ratepayers of the state. And so it is happening in other states. And New Jersey is considered one of the most privatization-friendly states.
Now, has there been any long-term... Has this been going on for a long time? Is this kind of a newer, the last 5 years situation? I'm curious to know if this is in response to some of the water quality issues that have been going along, or if this is purely a sort of corporate capitalist move.
No, I think that from the corporation's point of view, this is taking an opportunity.
Sure.
I would argue perhaps taking advantage. If you have, and I used this analogy with you before, Janice, that if there's a hurricane and somebody's going around selling bottles of water for $50 a pop, then you would say that that's price gouging.
Right.
And this is a similar thing. We have a genuine crisis in infrastructure that is broadly acknowledged. And my association is very involved with organizations like Jersey Water Works to help bring attention to this idea that infrastructure needs to be valued and it needs to be invested in.
Right.
So the issues are real, but I think that in terms of the investment community, they're seeing these failing systems as sort of a cash cow, as a way of increasing shareholder value and that type of thing. So it's not that I guess you'd say it's kind of a perfect storm of things that have been happening, and to one extent one is related to another, but and to the extent that all of the public systems, whatever their organizational structure is, to the extent that people have let systems run to failure, is another, unfortunately, another reason for this situation as well. And so, you know, it's a fairly complicated thing.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think the lack of federal funding for infrastructure improvements, trickling down to the lack of state funding, obviously, for infrastructure improvements,
absolutely,
is causing some of this?
In the 70s and 80s, actually, one of the reasons our association was formed was to help during this period. In the 70s and 80s, the federal and state government made all sorts of loans available to systems, and that coordinated, concerted effort between the states and the federal government is what enabled a lot of communities to have modern water and wastewater treatment. Those dollars aren't around anymore so much.
I mean, and those systems are 50 years old.
Right.
40, 50 years old.
So that absolutely is an issue. And finding a way of addressing that is certainly something on a lot of people's minds. I mean, there are proposals to, say, create some kind of a charge on everyone's bill that would create a state fund, a very small charge. There's a proposal that would change the the fee for allocation permits that drinking water systems have to get that would allow the state to create money for investment that way. There are a lot of different approaches, and I'm not sure, you know, what our association's position would be on each of those specific ones at this point, but I think that we need to figure out ways of addressing it. Certainly, small systems should consider regionalizing with larger ones, and I think that would help tremendously in many cases. But it's a really tough issue.
Do you think there's any room market-wise in either water or wastewater management for public-private partnerships in terms of improvements?
Well, there are existing public-private partnerships, and they can be as simple as in some cases you have an authority that is having an investor-owned utility or corporation running its system. You also have a case like Bayonne, which is a little bit of a new wrinkle
hybrid
in how it's done. And in Bayonne, it was a combination of an investment a group, KKR, and an investor in utility, and they created a lease with the city of Bayonne to run the system. So there are different approaches, and I could talk to
we'll
you
do another
hours
session on that. That.
Yes, I mean, public-private partnership is certainly an option. I think, like a lot of things, the devil is in the details.
Yeah, right.
Who's controlling it? What is it really going to cost us?
Yep.
Are the actual costs really being analyzed and considered during the process of negotiating whatever the agreement is? I mean, those are the kinds of things that people need to understand when one of these proposals is on
and the questions to ask.
Yeah.
Peg, thank you very much for being here with us.
Thank you. And, thank you for having me.
I think we definitely could do a second session on this and keep us posted so that, as things are happening or how we help make things move going forward.
Great. I would be happy to. Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Well, I'm pleased to announce today the formation of a commission on inalienable rights.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just announcing the formation of a bipartisan commission on international human rights, speaking at the State Department moments ago.
The commission is composed of human rights experts, philosophers, and activists. Republicans, Democrats, and independents of varied backgrounds and beliefs will provide me with advice on human rights.
Federal prosecutors in New York announcing sex trafficking and conspiracy charges against politically connected billionaire Jeffrey Epstein. Court documents just released reveal that Epstein's charged with creating a network allowing him to sexually exploit and abuse dozens of underage girls. In fact, he's accused of sexually assaulting more than 30 girls in Palm Beach, Florida, and New York. And this is USA Radio News.
I used to wonder when I saw people going into nice hotels, really nice hotels, taking a pillow with them. That was before I got a MyPillow, because I know it doesn't matter where I'm going. Whether I'm going to a 1-star, 3-star, 5-star hotel, MyPillow goes with me, whether it's just overnight or whether it's on vacation. And here's the great deal about MyPillow right now. The lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. Two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. That's only $34.99 per pillow. The lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And it's still the same pillow. Great pillow. 60-day money-back guarantee. 10-year warranty. And call them. 1-800-951-8175 or go to MyPillow.com, use promo code USA, click on the two-pack special, and get the best deal you've ever gotten on a good night's sleep when you get a MyPillow.
There's nearly universal condemnation of Iran's decision to enrich uranium, a violation of a 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. More on that from USA Radio's John Clemens.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was quick to respond to Tehran's announcement to increase uranium enrichment, calling it an extremely dangerous move.
The enrichment of uranium is made for one reason and one reason only. It's for the creation of atomic bombs.
Netanyahu also called on other nations to impose punitive sanctions against Iran, saying Tehran has violated its solemn promise under the UN Security Council not to enrich uranium beyond certain levels.
A new Justice Department legal team is taking over President Trump's push for a citizenship question on next year's census. The department announcing a new team of lawyers from the Civil Division will now be in charge of solving how to legally put such a question about citizenship on the decennial survey. And this is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now